confidence, the imposter syndrome, has been this cultural quicksand that women really have to like fight to get out of. Do you see this changing in a significant way?
It's still an issue. When I'm working with women, it always comes up.
A coach is a thought partner and an accountability partner. And is the person who helps that client move forward, learning from potentially from their past lessons.
I want women to remember, all of us to remember, that we have superpowers. We have superpowers. The one that is least talked about is intuition.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Powering Up, our cross-generational conversation about female power, what it looks like, why it's important, and how to claim your power individually and collectively. I'm Ann Doyle, author of Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders.
And I'm Monica Doyle. The topic today is how to build your confidence and get comfortable with power through mentoring, executive coaching, and sponsorship. We have two experts with us today. Both are very accomplished women with a long track record of success in the workplace. They each now lead their own executive coaching and leadership development and consulting companies. So our first guest today is Alba Contreras Rodriguez, founder of FONS, Focus on Solutions. Alba is a former global manufacturing and operations executive with Ford Motor Company and General Motors, now turned executive coach and consultant. Welcome, Alba.
Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Anne.
And Jocelyn Davis is the founder, president, and chief strategist of Jade Strategies. She's an award-winning leadership coach who has led more than 150 leadership training sessions. And she's also the founder of something called Mentoring Trailblazers, which is a leadership program designed specifically for professional women. Welcome, Jocelyn.
Thank you so much, Anne, and also Monica.
Happy to have you here in the Motor City Woman Studios outside of Detroit. And we want to get into your coaching skills with aspiring women. But we first want to take a couple of minutes to be talking about some of the incredible examples that we had just this week in terms of women claiming and flexing their power on the national stage. So we are recording this episode on Sunday, February 10th, which is right after the State of the Union address by President Trump to Congress. And a couple of the highlights of the evening for me were all those newly elected women in Congress joining the women who are already there, unprecedented number of women in Congress now, but the fact that they all were wearing white, the color of the suffragists, and sitting together collectively, on top of the fact that you had the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, also dressed in white, right up there, on camera, behind the president, throughout the whole thing. How did you feel watching that? Anybody?
Well, personally, while I was watching it, one thing that I was a little bit stunned about was Trump almost taking credit for all of the women being there.
They didn't let him, though. He tried, didn't
they? They didn't, but just, I mean, I feel like that's kind of where women are coming from, men taking credit for, like, not even just what they do, but also, when they finally do assert themselves, they're like, oh, look at all the good we've done. It's like,
isn't that ironic?
I'll tell you what really impressed me, too, is women working across the aisle to make that visual happen. So we have 102 women in Congress right now or in the House. And it's my understanding that of the 89 who are Democrat, they did not plan this by themselves. They actually asked the other 13 Republican women to join them in this. That was the most impressive thing about that event for me is, well, of course, I love the fact that there were women representing with the color and the, but it was great that they reached across the island and they worked together. And that's what we're looking for. Yeah. That's one of the many things we're looking for with this great, display of just women in power in politics.
Right.
I'm really happy to hear that. Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was very interesting to observe that the power of even silence. So just the visual of the having all those women be wearing white and being sitting together.
Right.
Even if they, because they really didn't get a chance to speak. They only stood up when Trump was talking about the fabulous representation and how women's, you know, gender
all the new
equality,
jobs in the economy.
it's getting to never seen before numbers, right? And I agree with you, Monica, that he kind of made it appear that it was part of his efforts. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that really caught my attention was that there's been a lot of conversation as to the new generation of women now in power in the House, but also given the cross-generation and the fact that Nancy Pelosi also was there sitting wearing white. It was like we are standing together and there is a potential of continuity that if she's there, look at all the people, look at the pipeline of women who will be able to be able to also be continuing sitting in that chair. So that was extremely visual. Even if, because to be honest, I didn't listen to it all.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't. And but for me, the visual was extremely, extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but then I decided to listen into it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I had to.
We have to know what's going on.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And with the sea of white and Nancy Pelosi in particular up there behind the president, Trump. One of the things that I thought of is the color kind of shows like the spread, you know. Mm. So we have like this sea of all these men in these black suits, and then we see this spread, and to have Pelosi up there in white as well. It's like, we're coming for you.
Yeah, I love it.
That's a really interesting point, right? Mm-hmm. And I was wondering about the fact, you know, the women senators did not wear white.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that?
That's
and
correct.
And maybe it was just sort of, this is something
thing.
Of the women of the House are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure if they had asked some of the senators, you know, if they would have, but they did not. You know, this is our thing.
Well, the other way that I interpreted that was that it was more the freshmen.
Oh.
The fresh woman.
Mm-hmm. The fresh
just,
people.
Yeah, the fresh people who were there and then showing, look at this huge amount of us who are now representing our different constituents.
It's almost a military uniform type thing. You know, it's like we're here to fight.
Well, it was also an address to the House. I mean, they were in the House. Like, this is our House.
Right. This is our House. I have to say more about the women working together and why that was so impressive. I'm finding a lot in my work as a coach that women talk a lot about having issues with other women supporting them or not supporting them.
Mm.
Yes, and that we are, I think we're doing a lot better here in the last couple, maybe 3 or 4 years of talking about the importance of women mentoring women.
Uh-huh.
That's really, really important, and that was a visual about women mentoring women. It was about to welcome that freshman crowd in, but there were veterans dressed in white as well.
Right.
To me, I saw that as an opportunity for them to work together and to learn from each other, because most definitely veterans need to learn from newbies, right?
Right, yeah.
And newbies need to learn from veterans. So that was really, really touched my heart to see that.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, Jocelyn, because one of the things we also witnessed in the past couple of weeks were many of those women who were just elected to Congress told their potential voters when they were running that they were not going to support Nancy Pelosi. And it took her leadership skill.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
It is.
To, once they got in there, to find a way to come together. And many of them, they ended up did support her, or the ones, once she had the vote she needed, she allowed some of them to not vote for her so that they could have some credibility with the voters back home.
Yes.
But your thoughts on that in terms of an example of leadership and that whole point you were making, Jocelyn, about the generations. I'm really interested. This is why Monica and I do this work together, because cross-generational work among women, I think, is really important.
Yeah, my view is that there may have been some initial natural resistance to say, We are younger. We have the passion. We are not attached to the status quo. We're going to be able to move on and do what we have set our minds to do. However, once they got into their roles, once they were elected, I think that it must have gone through their minds that they needed to work together. Mm-hmm. And I think that they were able to notice very quickly how they will not be able to be doing this by themselves, mm-hmm. and that they need to count on the strategic and ability of negotiating and understanding how to navigate in government. They needed this savviness of somebody like Nancy Pelosi. And that's why they have both gotten together and learned from each other, because I think that Nancy also realizes that she has to learn from
the new generation. Yeah, they're bringing her some power.
Yes. Absolutely, that's true. Yes. I also think that any time you have someone come into politics new, they don't have that level of experience. They think they're walking in to change the world. I don't care, male, female, doesn't matter. I think that happens. And a smart person, when they get into public office at that level, understands that I don't know everything. And they become more humble. And I think that is what's happened to these younger folks. They still have a great voice. They're still giving their opinion. You know, AOC is our girl, right?
She's talk
about young power. I mean,
talk about power.
It doesn't matter about her age. She's just a very powerful person. But she got a little quieter, you know, because her campaign, she had to make a space for herself, and she had to have her voice heard. She got in there, and she is still the powerful person we see, but she's a little more reserved. And I think that's because she got in and she realized there is a lot for me to learn, but there are people here who are going to help me. Yes. Understand how to be dynamic in this role.
I think she's really realized where to use that strong voice that she has, mm-hmm. and where to listen. Mm-hmm. And watching her, I've been paying very close attention to her as of late, because when she's, you know, on the warpath, oh my goodness,
yes.
she knows how to get stuff done.
Yes,
like watching her stomp around, like, where is everybody? The government shut down. What's happening? I want this to
where
be
is
ended.
Mitch McConnell?
No. Yeah.
I think she's comfortable with power.
Yeah. Like, so, and it's one of those things, actually, if I can use this as a segue into what you ladies do, it's the difference between, you know, the types of people who they say, I can't find the tools I need to do my job, and they say this to their bosses, and the bosses say, well, did you look for them? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the type of people that say, well, no, I didn't look for them. And then there's the type of people who can't find the tools for their job, and they go look for them on their own.
Right.
And so I guess that's kind of why where I want to venture into asking about what it is exactly the two of you do in your mentorship and your coaching.
Sure.
About power.
Sure. So the coaching, it's a process where you work with the client as the coach and the client relationship. It's an ongoing relationship, and it's based in a lot of trust. And it is a process where the coach helps the client achieve their goals, aspirations, and dreams, and achieve their highest potential. Now, the way that we do that is through a process of turning challenges into goals, then helping the client identify strategies and actions to achieve those goals, but also brainstorm around what are the potential obstacles that can get in the way? What are those potential derailers that we could foresee that could come in the way, and how the client would address them. And then finally, and not the last thing, is what are the resources and support that's required for that person to be able to achieve those goals.
Mm-hmm. So is this particularly in business, in politics, in life, or What is your focus of your coaching?
My focus of coaching is more on the individual.
Okay.
Either if the individual is the one who hires me as their coach, or the organization who hires me as a person to coach one of their executives or mean managers. Mm-hmm. And typically, it is a voluntary process, and more likely than not, it's a process where you're working with a person who has high potential, who's on the succession list, who is the person who is being groomed and prepared to assume positions of higher power and authority. Mm-hmm. But there is also some cases where there may be some behavioral issues or performance issues where we could also be called into working with a client like that. Mm-hmm.
So it's less like somebody coaching somebody to work on something in particular and more coaching them to work on themselves?
Well, yes. Jocelyn, why don't you give your perspective on that?
Sure. Alba did a very great, she did a great job of explaining what coaching is all about. And that's exactly where I'm coming from when I do my coaching work. But I will tell you that I specifically work with women around coaching. In my other life, where I'm doing strategic planning and working with organizations, there is a certain amount of coaching that has to happen, whether the leaders are women or men. So I work with them as a team. I know Alba does as well. But I actually have a separate piece of my business where I work with women. So not only do I do one-on-one coaching with women, but I actually hold events twice a year where women come to a workshop. It'll be a half-day seminar, and we work on everything. So, Monica, to your point, it's not just the professional side, and it's the personal side. It's life balance. It's all of that. We'll speak very specifically about issues that are important to the profession, you know, to women in professional roles, such as influence and negotiation and how to build those skills, how to understand sometimes the differences between gender and sometimes the conflict that can happen even within gender between women, around how to influence and negotiate with effectiveness. So we'll do that. But I'm really start with personal growth. I start there. I start with personal strategy. I almost take what I would do with an organization around around strategic planning and give exercises to women so they do a strategic plan for their lives. So it starts personal and then it moves to professional and hopefully also becomes an inspiration to them for anything else they want to do. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you notice generational differences? We're now at this moment where, the workplace has changed so much in the decades that I've been in it. So we now have these three generations. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got the baby boomers, the Gen Xs, and the millennials really coming into their own. Do you notice generational differences, particularly in terms of women, maybe related to confidence?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is definitely a growing trend of millennials wanting to also be coached, mm-hmm. because I think, I have had clients who are also millennials, so I've had the privilege of working with cross-generation men and women. And what it's important to notice is that millennials have really caught into the fact that they do need to work and learn from others, and that they've noticed that when you come in, that only your passion and drive is not enough. That there are certain strategies, to Jocelyn's point.
That was one of the criticisms of millennials, wasn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. we've been criticizing millennials for about 10 years. And now I think the light bulb is going on that, we need to work with them because they're about to outnumber us. Isn't that right?
About to? I mean,
it's true. Yeah, no,
right.
True.
Well, in the workplace. Right.
It's true. Yeah. I have to say that's actually the difference I've noticed is especially in my training around professional protocols. I will say that's a fancy way of saying business etiquette. I find that there are huge differences. If I'm working with, baby boomers, Generation X, they're hearing me and saying, yes, I remember having that conversation with my grandparent, you know, about how to, you know, network and how to properly respond to people. They're really into the emotional intelligence aspect of professional protocols. My younger people ask me a whole lot of whys. Why do I need to do it that way? Why is it that I need to dress a certain way? What's going on? So I've had to actually change how I have that conversation with younger people. I actually started out doing some for free because I knew it was a need going into some of the schools. This was about 7 or 8 years ago.
Is this high school?
Uh-huh. Middle school as well. I worked with some young people through an organization called Jack and Jill in Detroit. Some very old, very prominent organization that families join. And part of it is they're looking for some training for their children to get them ready for, you know, the business world or just, you know, social etiquette and also business. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that I have to have a different conversation about how to dress, how to impress, and why. The kids really respond, and even the high schoolers and college, because I've taken this also to Oakland University, OCC. I've done several workshops there. I have to tell them about why I'm doing this for them. It's not because it's what I am expecting of you, like your grandparent or your parent would do. I'm actually giving you some tools so that you can get ahead and advance and lead. I want you to do it because no one else can get the job for you. No one else can, you know, take the interview for you. So here are some tools for you. When they hear that, the young people say, yeah, let me listen to this. No, this is for me. It's not because this old lady, you know, is telling me what she thinks I need to know. It's I need these tools.
Does that make sense to you, Monica, in terms of from your generation point of view?
Yeah, well, and I think it's one thing that younger generations in particular are confused is not the right word, but I guess bothered about is because, you know, they want to dress the way they dress. They want to look the way they look. Right. And it's actually something that I think as of late is becoming sort of a movement. We see it with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You know, she says, like, hey, I'm Latina. I'm going to wear large hoop earrings and red lipstick because it's, you know, it's a part of my, you know, fashion culture. Mm-hmm. And another thing is, you know, for a long time, African-American women have been told that their natural hair is not something that they're allowed to wear because it's unprofessional, even though it's naturally the way that their hair looks. And so I think that it's extremely valuable for millennials to take stock in the professional attire. But I also think it's very important for older generations to listen to the reasons why millennials have issues with the structure that's in place. Mm-hmm. It's not so much that we don't want to wear professional attire. It's not so much that it's like, I want to wear, you know, a tube top to work. It's more like challenging conformity, mm-hmm. and trying to add expression to the business place. Trying to say, like, hey, sometimes my natural look, sometimes my culture being in the workplace is power and not unprofessional.
Does that sound like the kind of things you're running into as you coach these younger, this next generation, this important next generation?
Absolutely. I what I've seen is that it is a similar parallel to when women realize that we can not only take the counsel and support and mentorship from other women, we also need to get it from other men. Mm-hmm. So millennials have also realized, I can not only learn from my peer millennials, I also have to learn from the Gen Xers and the baby boomers so that I can make more educated decisions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're going to stumble. I think that millennials are, what we can learn from them, mm-hmm. is their ability to experiment and to learn and fail
and
stand
relax.
Up, dust it off, mm-hmm. and keep going and try it again. So that's the piece that we can learn from them. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is a realization, and there is definitely a higher interest in them being coached because they have learned that in order for them to move faster, they're going to have to learn some of the things that may be part of what they consider the old book.
Mm-hmm. But you know what I learned, Monica, also, younger people learn faster than my older clients. I've noticed that
absolutely.
My young clients are humble and they listen a lot. And then they're gone, mm-hmm. and they shoot. I mean, they just go places. I have a one young woman I worked with. She's actually from Ghana, originally from Ghana, and she moved here as a young girl, and she wanted to be an entrepreneur, and she sought me out. She came to a workshop that I did several years ago with the Alliance of Women from Southeastern Michigan, and she sought me out, wrote me a proposal. She asked me to lunch. She was young. She was like 19 years old. She writes me this proposal. It's 2 pages about why I should hire her. And it was all about what she could do for me and what I could do for her. It was just the most amazing thing. So I did. I hired her, and we had this kind of exchange. She helped me with technology. No, please, no offense, but I'm telling you, I need young people for technology. I mean, just tell the truth. She taught me about technology and other things, and I just let her shadow me. And this woman has taken off. She now owns 2 companies, a nonprofit and a for-profit. She travels back and forth from the United States to Ghana and has a serious business. She's the only one of many young people I could tell that story about. So I find that. My older clients, of course, they have more baggage because they've been in the system longer. And so we have to work through other issues. But my young people love it. They come in, they get it, they're gone, and they shoot to the moon. It's just wonderful.
Yes. You notice something similar, Elba?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Again, their willingness and thirst for learning. And it is something that we all need to mirror, because lifelong learning is going to be a skill that we're all going to have to really, really use on a daily basis nowadays, because everything is changing so quickly, not only in technology, but everything that's going on in society and with the economy and everything is really, really, it's a huge wake-up call for many that on lifelong learning, it's an absolute must.
Well, get into, would you explain the difference between mentoring, sponsorship, executive coaching, and maybe you can take some turns doing that. And maybe we start with mentoring?
Sure.
I think what I just described to you was sponsorship with the young woman, Naomi Afrie. That was sponsorship. She came to work with me. There was an exchange. There was still mentoring involved. I would say mentoring crosses both. Okay, mentoring is sponsorship. Mentoring is coaching. It's all of that. But I think mentoring, there doesn't necessarily have to be a transaction there. You can just be an example for other women, and that's mentoring. You can be more specific and, you know, decide I'm going to grab this group, this cohort, and, you know, show them what to do. But I think that that's different. Executive coaching to me is mentoring as well, but it is more structured to me. Mentoring is something casual that can just happen by accident just because you're an example, when I think the executive mentoring is, I guess, more structured.
I don't know, and I guess executive coaching you're paying for.
Right, right. That's a transactional thing.
Right?
Right.
And mentoring and sponsorship is more something that occurs in the workplace.
Yes. Yeah.
In one of the my favorite words to use for describing what a coach is a thought partner and an accountability partner. And is the person who helps that client move forward, learning from potentially from their past lessons, but move forward always, and holding them accountable and giving them feedback, and sometimes asking the very tough questions, the ones where the person has to sigh and say, that's a very good question, and they have to pause and they have to think. So those are really the pieces that are going to make that person grow and change. And the what they're seeking, what the client is seeking, is permanent change.
You know, the other big thing that's going on right now is that there are 11 people I counted up that so far have announced for that they're going to run for president. And I'm sure we have more to come. But of those 11, six are women. Now, this is unprecedented. And so I'm really curious. I mean, something is definitely going on, not only among individual women, but I believe in our culture. And one of the big issues, and Fortune magazine just wrote about it recently, is basically saying, you know, that that whole the confidence, the imposter syndrome has been these this quick cultural quicksand that women really have to, like, fight to get out of. Do you see this changing in a significant way?
It's still an issue. When I'm working with women, it always comes up.
Is it
so
the confidence, the imposter syndrome?
Imposter syndrome, and that's
and
a buzz term.
And explain what that is, that imposter syndrome.
So imposter syndrome is the feeling that you're not enough, you're not good enough, and that you're in the wrong place. In other words, that these folks are going to figure out that I'm not supposed to be here, that I don't have the knowledge to be here, the experience to be here, whatever. And it's a fear that holds you back from making great decisions to, you know, be a part of something or take the next step in your career or whatever. And I find that every time I meet with women to coach them, this comes up.
And I've read recently that it's at the very highest levels.
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, shouldn't you be building confidence, like the more success you have as you move up? But I've read that women at the very, very top still have this gender virus.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think it is important to also note that when we start working with a client, particularly women, you start with these very specific goals that have to do a lot with their professional growth. But as you go deeper and deeper, that's when we get into the point of we need to work on their self-confidence, mm-hmm. on their worthiness, on their you do deserve.
How do you work
to
on
be
that?
Here.
Yeah, I'm very curious.
Well, it is you need to work very slowly with a client so that the client realizes it themselves. It's not like you're going to say, oh, you lack confidence, or you are not worthy, or you have the imposter syndrome, because we're not here to diagnose anything. But it's slowly, through a lot of questions, a lot of inquiry, that's how we get them to see, oh, I think I have a confidence issue. Because one of the things that when you notice in general, people typically have the tendency to focus on the 10% that is going wrong and not mm-hmm. on the 90% that's going right.
True. Mm-hmm.
Right? So when I work with a client and you start talking about, so what have you accomplished? And I give them exercises mm-hmm. to focus on, tell me what you've done, what do you feel proud of? What do others feel proud about yourself? And sometimes, very sadly, you see that their answers to what others say about themselves is much larger than the list of what they think about themselves, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And when we do assessments too, and when you do a 360 and you ask the client and their peers or the people who work for them or their bosses to give feedback about them, sometimes they say, really? I did that? So it is interesting how
and this
you
is
can
more likely
them.
That women are that way than men?
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
I would add to that too, Alba. I have a mantra that I share with my coaching clients who are women, and it's know yourself, embrace your excellence, advance and lead. And this is on everything. It's on their notebooks that they get from me. It's on everything. So it's a process. Mm-hmm. Everything Alba said is absolutely what's going on in my organization, too. We are looking at helping them figure it out and not just say to them, you've got issues. You know, we have to work on your confidence. It's getting them to say, I have to work on my confidence, right, through assessments and other things.
So increasing that self-awareness mm-hmm. is one of our utmost objectives, is
yes.
to get there so that the person can realize and then start doing something about it.
Well, right. And as somebody who has experienced, you know, that tendency to focus on that negative 10% when there's, you know, other things happening, what's like the first and most important step to getting somebody to stop focusing so hardly on that negative 10%?
Well, one of the things that I ask them to do is to write down everything they've accomplished. What are they good at? How would people describe them? What are some of the things that have happened to them that nobody else has happened? Have they run a marathon? Have they formed a not-for-profit? Have they raised 5 children? Have they? So it's all that is to look at them as a whole person. And what is everything that has gone right in their lives? What are they most proud of, right? Mm-hmm. And when they look at that, and based on that, I ask them to use the coin term from Peggy Klaus, the bragging bites. So how did you develop your 30-second elevator pitch? Based on now that you are uplifted, what would you say to somebody about yourself? And that takes time for them to get to a point that they can feel very comfortable saying, this is who I am, and not feel guilty about saying how good they are.
Do you usually see immediate results with that, or does it usually take quite a while to build
up? It takes some time, but it can be pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
Would also add to that, Alba, the first part of that mantra, which is know yourself, requires several assessments so that they are looking at parts of their own temperament. Yes, I want them to understand, am I introverted? Am I extroverted?
Right.
You know, what are my strengths? I focus a lot on strengths, not so much on weaknesses. As mm-hmm. women, I find that we already think, as Alba was saying, that we have more weaknesses than we do strengths. So just traditionally, so I really focus on what the strengths are. Mm-hmm. And we'll do these assessments and then talk about that. And then when I talked about doing a personal strategic plan, Monica, I'm talking about, you know, what roles do you play in life? Name every role that you play. And that actually becomes, when you start having conversation about that, your mission. You know, what is it that I'm here to do? You know, vision is, where do you want to see yourself? 10 years from now, who are you, what are you doing, you know, what's your life about? We'll actually do some exercises to come up with that. We actually come up with a mission, a vision, values, priority statements, and all that, just like you would for an organization. We actually create a strategic plan for the person. We do it together.
So do you think that the fact that most women seem to have this trouble, you know, seem to experience this imposter syndrome, do you think that this might be left over, like the wound left over from, you know, years of culturally being told that we're less, culturally being told that we're less intelligent, less capable than men?
Monica, absolutely. Yes. So because we are powerful women, I mean, powerful beings, we're strong, we're smart, we're all the things that you describe, used to describe a man. But yes, we have a lot of catching up to do. It's just like any other underrepresented group, you know, at least in this country. I'm going to speak about the United States. Gender, race, religion. When you've been told certain things, and I don't just mean someone saying it to you, I mean the system is set up to tell you these things without using words. It does become sort of a game of catch-up.
Mm-hmm.
So there are real reasons why we find that women are experiencing a lot of issues around self-confidence. And, you know, there's the statistic that people like to throw around about how a man only needs to feel, when he looks at a job description and he's about to apply for a job, he only needs to feel like he can do 50% of what's on the page, and he's, you know, finishing his application.
I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. And a woman looks at it and says, I can only do 95% of that. Forget
it. Well, the woman wouldn't even apply.
Right, or she doesn't even apply. Right?
I've been there. Yes. I've had my hand over the application and been like, oh, but I can't do that.
Right, see? And we laugh about it, but it is actually
not funny.
It's real.
And you are both women of color.
Correct.
And you know, and so I'm wondering, is there a piece of that in terms of that's right on top of that that you add on top of the gender piece?
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me,
as a Latina, not only there is also a difference for us as women of color, but also culturally there are differences. Rather than focusing on our differences, we have so much commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the power of us working as women, supporting each other, comes.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be together, support each other as women. Right. It doesn't matter if it's women of color or no women of color.
Right.
Because white is a color, too.
Yeah, I got some color.
So that is where the power holds. And it is one of the things that we also have still a lot of opportunity. We have, as women, we must support and help each other.
Amen.
We have to.
Do you want to bring a perspective,
sure,
as an African-American woman to
this?
I do.
It really goes back to what I was saying to Monica about how we, you know, we have these differences, and because of our experiences, our paradigms, we're going to women, people of color, different religions who have, you know, felt persecution over the centuries. You know, we're going to bring a certain, sometimes a deficit to the party, right? Where we're saying, okay, and I mean in terms of self-confidence, not in terms of being smart, being strong, being powerful, all those things. We could be equals in that, and all have a lot of differences that were visual, that were, you could see. But it is that we come to the party with different issues around self-confidence based on that. So saying that, as an African-American woman, sometimes I have had experiences in my career where both of them have been a problem for others,
mm-hmm,
right? That,
mm-hmm,
they want a stereotype,
mm-hmm,
and say, okay, she's, if I get upset about something, angry black woman. You know, that,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing. There are all kinds of silly things that I've experienced. That's a whole other show, Anne and Monica. We'd have to.
And I want to. We're going to do one on becoming.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I love that fabulous book that
book
Michelle Obama. Yeah, and
yes,
we're going to do that. Right?
Whoa! Tell me to get in here either on the phone or something.
Okay,
I'd love to give a perspective.
Be part of that. Okay.
Yes, I would love it.
And
right.
I'm sad to say that we're out of time.
Oh.
Because the time has just flown, and there's so many topics that we could talk about. Thank you so much. And I want to just ask each of you if you would leave a couple of tips that you would say to someone who is listening to this in our audience and may not have executive coaches right now. What would you leave them with?
What I'd like to leave everybody today is there is a very important takeaway that I want to leave for everybody, and that is that each one of us needs to have what I call your own board of directors, your own supporting group. And that supporting group, it consists of sponsors, and it's those people who vouch for you and represent you and can put your name for the next promotion or the next opportunity. It's also having mentors internally or externally to the organization. It's also having a coach, if you can afford it, or your organization can afford it, or you invest in your own career development. And also having advisors, people that you have by a specialty who you can really count to as a subject matter expert in a specific field.
How do people get in touch with you, Alba?
So my organization is called FONS, Focus on Solution. My website is www.focusonsolution.com.
Awesome. And Jocelyn?
Oh, I just want to speak to what Alba was speaking about. I have a topic. I'm going to be speaking on International Women's Day on March 8th for the Center for Financial Planning in Southfield. I'm their keynote this year. And my topic is Cultivate Your Tribe, which is what you just talked about.
Love it.
So it's going to be good. But I want to bring up one other thing as a takeaway here. I want women to remember, all of us to remember, that we have superpowers. We have superpowers. The one that is least talked about is intuition. Men are actually socialized not to trust their intuition and not to talk about it, because intuition to them means feelings, right? Think about it. We've heard these terms like women's intuition and mother's intuition. We're taught to actually value intuition. Men aren't always taught to do that. Let's use that. That is a huge superpower, to be intuitive, to trust your feelings, trust the gut. There's a lot of science behind that gut feeling that we have.
It's okay. Real.
Neurotransmitters, yeah, there's a whole thing. You can look it up and you'll find that there's a lot of science behind it. We have to use that and trust ourselves.
And how can people get in touch with you, Jocelyn
Thanks,
Davis?
Anne. They can. At jadestrategies.com. That's J-A-D-E, strategies.com, one word. And I can be emailed through the website. And I look forward to hearing from your audience, Anne and Monica, because I do these workshops for women every year. And I'm looking to plan one for this spring.
They are fabulous.
Trailblazers. Thank you, Alba. They're called Mentoring Trailblazers. And I'd love to add people to that mailing list.
All right. Well, thank you, Alba Contreras Rodriguez.
Nice.
And Jocelyn Davis.
Thanks for coming. Las mujeres somos las de la intuición.
Oh, wonderful.
That's one of my favorite songs. Thanks for being here, and
have a great week,
have
everybody.
Have a great week.
Thank you.
I'm Ann Doyle.
I'm Monica Doyle.
Let's go.
Power up.
Thanks for joining us at Powering Up. We hope you'll subscribe and share it with your network, everybody. And Monica and I would love to hear from you through the Powering Up Women Facebook page. And remember, power is the currency for getting things done. Claim yours and put it to work.